Hello everyone, welcome back to our today's episode of InsurTech Business Series. How are you, Jamala?
Yeah, I've been good. Thank you for asking. Are you?
Well, I've been fine. We still have work to do, but overall I'm good. And thank God now that they've uplifted some of the ban and people are able to commute as they used to, except this time with caution.
I mean, things are really getting back to normal. It's almost like right in Lagos, it's almost like we never had, there's no corona.
That was the reason why I had to put the caveat like caution, so that it doesn't seem like the fact that the ban is off does not mean that there's still no coronavirus. So it's just important for us to, you know, like we owe ourselves that duty of care.
And this is our 10th episode. Wow. Amazing.
Exactly. But this one is actually quite, unique because this is a female coming on to our podcast. Yeah. We've been having several interactions with male, and like this is just a twist to it. Like, so it doesn't seem like the entire industry is filled with these guys. Yeah. I'm happy about this. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm a female, so it's, you know, interesting to actually have these conversations with people who are female that have been in the industry long enough, you know, to give us their own perspective, their views from a feminine point of view. I don't know if that's correct, but yeah, that's my own excitement.
It's gonna be interesting, you know, listening to Mrs. Abimbola Nokomaya, who is the MD of Peak Trust Insurance Brokers Limited, and she doubles as well as the Vice President of the Professional Insurance Ladies Association, PILA. So it's going to be interesting to hear what PILA has been up to, and for her as well to hear how business has been as an insurance broker. She's the first insurance broker that we're going to be speaking with, so it's going to be interesting to hear from her point of view how they have adjusted to the lockdown and the pandemic, and how that has really affected business, and, you know, really what should we be expecting to see from PILA in coming months.
I mean, it's important because I really, if I'm in industry, I really want to know what PILA has to offer to a female like me, with an all-female group. Like, what exactly, why would I be interested in joining the association? But it's a good one.
Yes.
So we'll be having her on the program right after the break. Stay tuned.
Welcome, ma.
How are you? My name is Bimbo Onakumaya.
Nice to meet you. Welcome to our podcast.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great, great. We're looking forward to a very interesting conversation. And so so to start off, for people that are getting to hear this name for the first time, so who is Abimbola Onakumaya?
Well, first and foremost, I'm female. I hope you can hear that from my voice. Okay. Abimbola Onakumaya, a female Christian born 60 years ago. And I'm a chartered insurance professional working currently with Peak Trust Insurance Brokers Limited as the managing director, CEO. That's the short brief about myself.
Great.
Something else that you want to hear.
That's a perfect one. And one thing that just jumps to my mind is the number that you mentioned, 60. How does it feel to be as young as 60?
It doesn't even feel any different. It just makes me look at things and decide that, oh, now that I'm 60, I definitely have to take some specific decisions about going slowly. Because if you're not careful, if you're not careful, you just keep on at it. Since there's basically no difference in your physique, no difference in your outlook, so you just keep at it. So it's like I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to strategize and make sure that I go much slowly as other things. Yeah, that's the only thing I think. And it's going to have to be a very, very conscious decision. I don't really feel any difference.
I was going to ask, since you celebrated your 60 years, which congratulations, I think congratulations is like the best best way to do something. But I was going to ask, like, what exactly you would advise some of us that are upcoming, aside from life in the industry and all of that, like, what exactly would you advise some of us that was still dragging our luggages from behind?
It's a very serious issue, actually, because for all you know, one day leads to 1 week, leads to 1 month, leads to 1 year, and before you say Jack Robinson, you're 60. So I think that it is important that you actually strategize. God granting grace, God granting life, you have to have some specific goals that you want to achieve. Now, even if you don't eventually achieve exactly what you had in mind to do, you wouldn't be too far from it. It's completely different from if you're drifting. If you're drifting, there's a time to drift in life. For example, you were born to a certain set of parents. They sent you to this primary school, compared to this secondary school. But by the time you start getting to university level, no more drifting. Have some strategic things in mind that you want to do, you want to achieve, and go for it. Because the time just comes and just passes. If I look back and I thought, you mean that if I didn't do X, Y, Z at so and so time, I'll be 60 now, probably selling Gary or something of that nature if I decided, okay, I don't want to go to school. I'll still have a skill. And I'm not condemning those that are selling Gary because we cannot do without them. But the fact remains that it has to be something, not that will just drop into your lap. It has to be something that you specifically go out of your way to achieve. That's what I just want to say. Yeah.
In that light, can you... Because, on this podcast, we talk to insurance professionals, right? And one of the reasons why we decided to speak with you is because you are a professional in the industry. Can you please, just tell us about, your journey in the industry, where you started and what you are involved in at the moment?
Journey-wise, I actually started my insurance career in the UK. Because I went over there to have, to do my master's. And immediately I finished my master's, I just started working with an insurance company.
Yeah.
I didn't have to come. I had already done my youth corps in Nigeria before I left. So that wasn't a major issue for me. So I just joined an insurance company. It was a life insurance company at that point in time, called Hill Samuels Life and Investment Services. And it was a subsidiary of a merchant bank called Noble Lounge Merchant Bank. So that's how I started. And I started as an associate. We were not paid salaries. We were paid, your commission or professional fees, whichever one you want to call it, based on the number of policies that we sold. So we joined the company. We'll do some training. They'll teach us the terms and conditions of the particular policy. They'll also highlight which policy it is that they want for you to really focus on. And the one that I started with was called at that time, I'm talking now of 1982, but it was called flexible. It was a flexible life assurance policy. And basically the way we were taught was to ensure that we focus on the need of the client. So if you go into, a client's office or a potential client's house, you were supposed to put your ear, you were supposed to put on your listening ears, an extra ear to listen. What is the person saying? And what do you think the person is really saying? So with that, we were tuned into providing a need, satisfying a need, rather than selling the insurance policy that we had in hand. So while you actually probably went there because the person owned the vehicle and you, your intention was to probably sell something to the, you know, to the family for insurance, and the fact remains that the moment the person talks about the child, you just key in that, oh, this person has a child. It means that in 1 year's time, in 3 years' time, in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, needs for children's endowment. And so you begin to skew, you begin to skew your conversation in line with what you believe the person needs. And that way your sales came easier than if you were trying to sell the policy that was in your hand. So that was actually how I started, you know, selling insurance. And of course, because I was, well, I'm still female, but at that time I was black, I was female, black, female, and the insurance companies also had a lot of stiff competition with the banks and building societies. So it was not an easy, it was not an easy ride at all. And if you bear in mind the fact that if you don't make a commission, you ain't gonna eat nothing. So you had no choice but to go for it. Yeah. So that was what, because my husband at the time was, you know, reading for his PhD. So I was the one who was working. And so we were basically more or less managing on whatever it is that I was making. So you can imagine the drive. There was no way I was going to come back to the house without making, selling, you know. So so basically that was how I started. And then of course, when we left, when we left Wales and then came back to Nigeria, I now joined the National Insurance Commission, which was the insurance company to be in at the time. I stayed there for 10 years, you know, and I specialized in, you know, marine, special risks, oil and energy, you know, and reinsurance. So I stayed there for 10 years before I moved to Anderson Consulting, called Accenture, you know, later on and all that. And then I now moved to Unique Insurance PLC. Unique Insurance PLC being a private insurance company. Immediately after I left Unique, I set up Pick Trust Insurance Brokers Limited, and that was 2003, and I'm still the CEO till date.
Oh, wow. Judging by these experiences you've had over there, do you think that there is a huge difference in our practice of insurance in Nigeria and the one in the UK? I mean, judging by the fact that we have some of these rating differences, pricing, you know, I couldn't help but put at the back of my mind the fact that you mentioned that you had to listen to the customer's needs before, you know, providing them with a solution. I still struggle with the fact that insurance in Nigeria has to do with, well, I have a product and I probably might just impose this on my customer because I feel that this is what they might need, not necessarily what they claim to need. So was there any, was there any difference at that time?
It's not as if even now it's distinctly different. But the issue that is on ground is this. There is no aspect of life that insurance is not important in. There is no aspect of life. Whether you want to go and have a baby, insurance is important. Whether you are sick, insurance is important. Whether you want to go to school, insurance is important. There is no aspect of life at all. So there shouldn't be any difficulty. Let me put it that way. There should not be any difficulty in trying to get the particular insurance product to fit the particular client. There shouldn't be a problem. What an individual needs today is not necessarily what that individual is going to need in 5 years' time. the issue that is on ground is this. Go and face your core competence. Mm. Let us give you peace of mind. Mm. So if your core competence is, to put it again, selling Gary, you go and focus on that Gary you are selling. And let me, as an insurance professional, provide you with the peace of mind that you require to be able to sell your Gary effectively. Mm-hmm. How do you sell it? From the beginning to the end of the sale of Gary, it includes planting of the cassava. So, agric insurance comes into place. It includes transportation, going to the farm back and forth. So, goods in transit will come into place. If you are the owner of your vehicle, it will include motor vehicle insurance, even if it is third party, to at least ensure that anything that happens, your third party is covered. Then it includes also a projection for the sales of your cassava, transporting, making it into Gary, and then getting it out to the market. Every single aspect of anybody's life needs insurance. So we should not actually be finding it difficult to sell. There is a distinct difference between us not having a solution and trying to coin a solution. We already have the solution. The solution is already on ground. The issue is put the round peg, you know, to fit the round hole. But if somebody needs A, then you are now trying to sell the person B. That is where the challenge comes. I don't really see the problem that we have at all. You know, even the rating structure. Yes, we actually imbibe some of the ratings from the UK market. But even the UK market is very, very flexible. The most important thing is that the rates which you are going to apply to any of the insurances that you're trying to provide should fit the risk that is being borne. And there's nothing cast in concrete. The rates can be malleable and also profitable for the insurance companies. So the issue that I see in the Nigerian market is more an issue of the awareness of insurance and the way and manner in which you should not even be thinking of doing without insurance. It should not be a product that should be on the back burner. It's not until the high rise, you know, catches fire at Tinubu Square, then everybody will start saying, hey, was there insurance? No, it should not even be a secondary issue. It should be on the front burner. You see? So I'm thinking to myself that we have quite a bit of work to do. I can assure you of that. But a lot of our insurance organizations and insurance statutory organizations have really, you know, they are rising up to the task. Between the NIA, which is the National Insurance Association, and Nigerian Council of Registered Insurance Brokers, to the PILAR, which is the Professional Insurance Leaders Association, to ILAN, which is the Lost Sisters Association, every single person is now, you know, and then, of course, the underwriters themselves, and then the reinsurance, everybody is now very, very conscious of the fact that, you know, insurance is a necessity, and we're really doing our best, the little we can, in each of these various bodies to make the Nigerian public aware of the need. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that. And I mean, it's a good way to link up to our next question. You know, when you talk about all of the statutory bodies and stakeholders in the industry, and I know that you are part of the new leadership for PILAR, PILAR being the Professional Insurance Ladies of Association in Nigeria. And can you tell us a bit about what PILAR looks to achieve, you know, going forward, especially with your own administration?
Okay, first and foremost, you know, as you said earlier, PILAR is the Professional Insurance Ladies Association, and is the foremost female professional body in Nigeria.
Yeah.
It's a subsidiary, so to speak, of the Chartered Insurance Institute of Nigeria, and but its members are all female. We don't have any male. We're all female, and we're all female professionals. In other words, you have to be either already a chartered insurance, a chartered insurer. In other words, you have your Associate of Chartered Insurance Institute of Nigeria, or you have your Associate of the Chartered Insurance Institute done, or you are a fellow, you know, any of those two bodies, as the case may be. Now, basically, the idea is to ensure that the professional women have a body with which they can relate, within which they can network, they can also train, and then, of course, there's mentoring. The idea is to be able to stand our ground and be reckoned with amongst all the other female professions, or all the other professions where there are female. There's hardly any profession where there are no females, but when you talk of professionalism, like probably with the lawyers, with the accountants, and you know, like that, we also are a professional insurance body where we can actually stand our ground as far as our profession is concerned, and also be able to contribute our own quota to the development of the economy of Nigeria. Because of the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, insurance, you know, runs across the whole gamut of any human being's life and also any country's existence. As female insurers, we also should be able to make our own major contribution in highlighting the need of the insuring public as far as insurance is concerned, and therefore contributing our own parts to the gross domestic product of our country, you know? Because if people don't realize that a professional lady, a professional insurance lady has something to contribute, then obviously we won't have done our work. This new administration, for example, has actually taken the bull by the horns. You know, I'm just the vice president. I have a, you know, an exco under the leadership of a president, exco being executive committee under the leadership of a president. Our membership is roughly 500 strong as it is. And of course, we're pushing, you know, for more members to be active, you know. So, but the main thrust of the Professional Insurance Ladies Association for this particular period, as we just assumed office, we want the theme that we're riding on is mission to movement. We understand what our mission is. We have our mission, we have our vision as a professional insurance organization, but we want to make much more direct impact. We want even the governments, the female, especially skewed statutory bodies, to recognize the fact that we just didn't go to school to read. We have some degree of relevance in the economy also.
Well, so recently we saw that you had a partnership with the Ministry of Women Affairs in Lagos on the fight against rape, and you had a walk recently. And so, how does the organization plan to, you know, address some of these issues? What other areas are you looking at in terms of, you know, helping to raise awareness exactly again about, you know, rape and things like that?
Well, we have only just started. This particular exco has not even spent 3 months. But you know, the reason why we decided that, okay, let us commence with this issue of rape is that it begins to sound as if there can be an excuse for a bad thing. If something is bad, it does not have two names. Is bad. Even today, if you go and check the newspapers, an 80-year-old woman was raped and it came out in the newspapers today. Excuse me, please. What is anybody looking for with an 80-year-old woman? Some people will say, oh, it is the way the woman dressed. Okay, let us assume that some women dress provocatively. Did they send you a letter? If you, how about a 2-year-old baby? How about a 6-month-old baby?
Mm.
How, what kind of accusation are you going to give that one?
Mm.
What kind of accusation? If you say some women dress provocatively, okay, what happens to the issue of a 2-year-old child that is female? What happens to the issue of an 80-year-old, 85-year-old person that is female? You can't just continue to give excuses for the way and manner in which this person dressed, or the way, when the person dressed, did the person write you letter and say, please come and look at my dressing? They take advantage of their perception, and the perception that they have is that a female is a weaker vessel. If somebody is weak, let us even assume that is true.
Mm.
Weakness should provoke protection, not abuse.
Mm.
First of all, it's not even, we have strengths without which the male counterparts cannot even function effectively. But apart from that, even if it is an issue of weakness, weakness should provoke protection and not abuse. And I think it's a no-no. It is an absolute no-no that you think that the next thing that happens is sliced bread was invented is for you to commence raping people just because you think that they are weaker than yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these men that are involved in this thing, they have mothers, they have sisters, they have, you know, female nieces and things. And when somebody even leaves their child with you, the next thing that you're thinking of is how to take advantage of that child negatively. A lot of this rape that takes place is between people that they know. They're not strangers, either uncles or cousins, or, you know, just taking advantage. And I think that the law is, to my own, this is my personal opinion now, that the law is a little bit too lenient. If you teach one or two people a lesson that they'll never forget, other people will sit up. The victims there must be sympathy for the victims. The law has to come down hard on it. That is on one side. Apart from rape, there are other kinds of abuse. Other types of abuse that, because some women don't want their homes to break and stuff like that, they'll hide a lot of things under the carpet. But if they knew that, if they had an avenue of redress, a lot more people will come out. A lot more female will come out. Any form of violence, whether it is against even the female or even the male, should not be condoned. This is a country that has leadership that is highly exposed, highly knowledgeable. And there is nothing new under the sun. The leadership of this country, Nigeria, is a very strong leadership. What we're asking is that God will grant them the grace to be able to effectively clamp down on any form of abuse. And Pillar, as a body, we are ready to team up with any female organization. For now, yes, we are working closely with the Honorable Commissioner for Poverty Alleviation, you know, and she has been Honorable Bada has been extremely helpful in championing this cause. She has been very, very helpful, and we are also very, very grateful.
Recently, even social media has been, you know, causing an uproar in ensuring that rape victims are actually vindicated, and they are, I mean, punishment for all of the other perpetrators are, you know, they are heavy, as you've rightly mentioned. But again, for organizations now, I'm going to bring it inward. Would this extend to sexual harassment as well? I mean, where it comes to a particular boss trying as much as possible to sexually harass a subordinate or vice versa, be it a male or a female. But I'm more interested in the female aspect of it, because we're talking about, you know, pillar here. So what exactly do you think this would extend to?
I think for every organization, every company should have their rules and regulations that will be monitored strictly by the human resources department of that organization. And what has the organization been set up for? If you have a lot of digression and people not being comfortable within the office setup, invariably, you are going to get the worst of it, because there will be a lack of concentration and there will be lack of proper contribution of the person's time and energy towards the original reason why that person was employed. You cannot be doing your work as a female and use part of your concentration to keep warding off all kinds of harassment. There are only two sets of people that I'm aware that God created, male and female. And he created the both of them to coexist. So in the coexistence, part of the coexistence is in the home. Another part of the coexistence is in the office. So when you're going to work, you are going to work to go and, you know, contribute your own quota and earn a meaningful salary. Your purpose of going to work is not to go there and go and start fending off all kind of advances. So the human resources department of every organization should be extremely conscious of the fact that this issue of sexual harassment actually does exist, and put in checks and balances. You can even have a whistleblower policy within the organization. In other words, if somebody comes to report such and such a thing has taken place, there shouldn't be punishment for the person that has come to report. So far, that person has the ability to prove it, so that they will not be telling lies on people. You know, like if you are not doing your work well and your boss is trying to, you know, correct you, then the next thing you start saying is that it's sexual harassment. No, there should be checks and balances. If you have not done your work well, you get a verbal warning. After your verbal warning, another verbal warning, then another verbal warning, then a written warning. So by the time the person begins to collate such information, you will now know that it doesn't have anything to do with sexual harassment. But in a situation where there is no warning, and then the time for promotion and appraisal comes, and then there's victimization, there will be room for someone to be able to say, it's because he doesn't like me, it's because he's made advances and I have not played ball, you know? So the human resources department of every organization should put in place, you know, policies to ensure that there is absolutely no victimization of anybody, whether the person is a female human being or a male human being. That is the work of the human resources department. And with the whistleblower policies that are being, you know, instituted in many organizations now, we find out that it is very much, much easier for sexual harassment to be making the board.
From your own perspective now, for example, I listened to your conversation with my friend Dushima on our podcast, and you mentioned that when the pandemic, the lockdown started and all, one thing that stuck out for me was that you were able to keep renewals and engagement with your customers up and consistent. How were you able to do that? And what kind of reality does that spell out for you as a broker going forward?
Well, in the first instance, this COVID thing, let me just say that it crept up on everybody. Nobody like prepared for it. Mm. But because ordinarily, whenever you have to renew your policies, you're supposed to give your clients enough notice. Mm. Some of the insurances, sometimes 1 month notice, sometimes 1.5 to 2 months notice. So obviously, the pandemic thing, the lockdown thing started around March. So unless that client was not intending to pay the premiums before, if the person was intending to pay the premiums, if something commences in March, by April, the premiums should, let me emphasize, should have been, you know, almost ready to be paid anyway. So what we did was to just ensure we have the normal schedule of transactions with which we use to report all our transactions to our supervisor, that is to the National Insurance Commission.
Yeah.
So basically what we do is just do our normal renewal notices, but because we couldn't now visit, there was, I mean, the fallout was on the data. In other words, there was much more in terms of phone calls, in terms of, you know, sending WhatsApp messages, sending text messages and all that. You know, so that was what chopped a lot of the money this time around. You didn't, but the money you saved on petrol and moving up and down on the streets of Lagos or Ibadan, wherever your offices are, we used quite a bit of it on data. But the idea was to just ensure that you kept on, you know, getting involved with your clients, asking for their safety in the primary anyway, because, you know, that thing, that COVID thing is one kind. It's a very odd disease. You know, unlike the case of Ebola, it's very swift to catch on. So attempting to even keep on, you know, with your clients, asking after their safety shows that you have some additional care for them, completely different from the insurance that they're doing with you and through you. Yeah, so as far as I was concerned, as a matter of fact, funny enough, we even still had some new businesses. That's funny, you know. I was expecting that, you know, staying at home, one would not, you know, get, but we did have new businesses. You know, people that probably knew about you before and they needed to do some things, marine insurance in particular.
Yeah,
we did have new businesses. Yeah, I mean, it made us, you know, sit on our toes and keep calling insurance company because, you know, we can't insure. We're just the intermediaries. Please, how far with our policy? And how far with the rating? Okay, and so we now worked more in the sense that we didn't now close at 5 or 6 or 7 by 8. I'm still, excuse me, please. Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. So there was much more work to do. But more data was utilized, but we didn't lose any business by the special grace of God. Yeah.
Okay, so now I'll be asking about Pillar. I know that most of what we really wanted to find out about the, you know, professional body for ladies itself is to know, what exactly would you advise the industry to do in order to attract, you know, female customers, female clients? I know that the banks are doing something. They keep finding ways to attract the female customer. And insurance company outside Nigeria, they found a way to create products that would attract the female gender. So what do you think can be done in this space, in this insurance industry? And I mean, it would be very good if a body like Pillar can actually drive that, because this would even create that, it would create a sense of belonging by other females, both in the industry and outside.
Yeah, basically, we've already started. There are some insurance companies that have deliberately skewed some policies, making it more favorable to the ladies. Cornerstone Insurance, for example, they have a product. It's a motor vehicle product normally, but by virtue of the fact that they think that females are a little bit more careful when it comes to the issue of, you know, driving and being on the road, the rates which is applicable, I think it's called a pink policy or something of that nature, the rate applicable for the female is softer rates than that applicable for others. I don't think that, as far as Pillar is concerned, we have not yet started looking at those kinds of female-related skewed directly towards it. But one thing that we know is that as a professional organization, anything that's got to do with female-only and children, you know, like our children's endowment policies are policies which, you know, we're looking to ensure that at least most families become conscious of the fact that if the breadwinner passes away, the children are not left you know, to the whims and caprices of one uncle or one auntie somewhere. In the days when we were growing up, if anything happened to the father who was, you know, the breadwinner at the time, you know, your mother would probably go and sell her gold and sell her earring and things. But now, even if you want to sell gold, you may not get anybody to buy it. It is the insurance company. Yeah, it's the insurance company that will, you know, step in. So there are insurances that are skewed especially towards the children, you know, where you can cash in the insurance policy maybe once every 3 years, 5 years. And because they're skewed towards the children, a lot of our female, you know, are encouraged to take on such policies. That way, the education of your child, whether it's your girl child or your you know, boy child, doesn't really matter. The education of your child is not left, you know, just at, you know, to the whim of anybody. Yes, that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it also is the fact that we're not encouraging, you know, child abuse of any nature, like child hawking, you know, of any nature. Thank God now that, I mean, there's a positive aspect of COVID where a lot of the parents are being compelled to help in towards the education of the child physically.
Yes.
that's a positive aspect of COVID. Normally, you send them off to school. And at the end of the day, you just participate with the school on. But now, it also has encouraged a lot of bonding. And you are now able to see, you know, one or two of the gaps in terms of your child's attention span. You know, whether your child has an attention deficit. You are able to see all those kind of things. So, as a professional organization, we are indeed encouraging our women to ensure that things has got to do with, because you educate, when you educate a female child, you are basically educating the nation, the future of the country. You know, it's that's how important it is for us. Because we are the girl child is the future mother.
Yeah.
If the man even goes out to work, a lot of even the work situation, how many families exist now without having both male and female putting down something, you know,
financially. Yeah.
So in terms of educating the girl child is a major priority, which we intend to happen, you know, as a female organization. It's very important to us, yes.
All right. As regards talks around digitization and the COVID-19 and the pandemic and the lockdown and everything. I mean, when you were speaking earlier, you talked about how, you know, things really had to change for your business, right, at Pictros, in terms of how you engage your customers and things like that. So talks around digitization, and this is something that we really struggle with currently in our industry here in Nigeria. I wanted to hear your thoughts as regards maybe what your company is doing personally, or maybe if Pillar, what Pillar wants to do in that regard, in terms of maybe upskilling members, or really how the women in the industry can make more impact in that area.
First and foremost, this new executive committee, this new exco under our president, we have really taken the bull by the horns.
Right.
Immediately after our swearing in, one of the first things we did was to have a strategy session with a very strong a team of strategy people that know their onions. And the issue of insurtech is basically what I think you're trying to say, you know, and digitalization and everything. You know, the issue is you have to have something that you put in place to be able to reach out to many people. A lot of Nigerians are not actually so as literate as you think. I'm talking now of even an ability to speak English and communicate. English is not our mother tongue. Yes. And so if anybody cannot speak English, nobody can look down on them. But the ability to be able to reach out, to make them aware of the fact that insurance is a necessity. I'm going back to the original thing that I said when we started this discussion. it is not, well, it's not in itself a female thing. It is that insurance in itself is a necessity. Whether you are male, whether you are female, whether you are a corporate person or an individual. And so many organizations, many insurance organizations have commenced a lot of visibility strategies for their companies. You know, there's LinkedIn, there's Twitter, all the social media is being utilized to ensure that your company continues to be, it continues to remain relevant in the scheme of things. A lot of the insurance companies themselves have started a lot of visuals. You know what people see? A lot of people have phones, even if they don't go to school. They have phones. And so when you do a when you do advertisements by telephone, on the social media, on the WhatsApp, on Instagram, people see these things. People see these things. The marketplace may not be so easy to go to, but people are selling clothes online. They're selling shoes, they're selling clothes online. They're selling even ready-made food online. In as much as the restaurants are closed, human beings are still eating. So what's happening there? So you don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel. The way and manner in which someone can stay in his in her house and prepare a very nice pot of soup or snails and you know, capture it with the phone and then send it and broadcast it, the same way insurance the companies have started doing. A lot of them have gone digital. A lot of them have started creating awareness concerning themselves, concerning the various products. So what has happened is that a lot of insurance companies have now put on their thinking caps. How do they arrest the insuring public with their visuals? And so many people are now using the WhatsApp technique to reach out to people. And then, of course, the webinars. A lot of webinars are now taking place. People can now, you know, and the webinars are not expensive. Some of the webinars are just maybe 10,000 naira, 5,000 naira. Some of them are even free, just to ensure that there is, people are hands-on concerning their knowledge capacity of insurance. There are some things that are a little bit clumsy. For example, inspections, you know. So inspections of property are a little bit clumsy. But once you put on your mask, you put on your social distancing concept in your mind, you put on your mask, you put on your face shield, we're still doing, we even at Peak Trust, we even still conducted some inspections this week we're at. This week that is just ending. Going that is physically now, because when you want to insure somebody's property, you want to be sure of what you're capturing. And you also want to be sure of the kinds of safety measures that are in those compounds or in here. Maybe they've got their fire extinguishers in place, whether they have proper exits. If there's a fire and there's a lift, you cannot take the lift. You have to go out through another entrance. So basically, we still conduct those things, but we are extremely careful to obey all the social distancing rules. And we haven't been any worse off for the COVID.
All right, that's amazing. So thank you very, very much. You really appreciate your time. We really enjoyed speaking with you, and
that's why you didn't know that the time was
yes all right. So it was really, really amazing, and well done with the work you're doing. You yourself and your team are doing that pillar, and we are happy to support your initiatives around around awareness on rape, and so we really appreciate
and other forms of violence.
Absolutely. So thank you very, very much. So how can thank people you. Connect with you, LinkedIn or where?
You should know the answer to that. You've been trying to get it.
Yes, I have. I know the answer, but for people that are listening, so I don't want everybody to come to me. If you come to me, you pay.
Yes, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's one place where I'm a little bit active. My brand is also active on Instagram. But Peak Plus Insurance Brokers as an organization, of course, we have our website, www.peakthrust.com.
All right.
And then you can reach, once it's insurance related, you can reach out to me easily. And of course, on the LinkedIn is a very, very good place to reach. I mean, you can easily reach me, yeah.
All right.
Especially people that might want to contribute to, you know, fighting rape as well.
Other forms of social violence. You'll be shocked, really, at what some people are going through and, you know, covering up. Not because they feel like covering it up, but because they don't know the social recourse that they have to get redress, you know. And it's important for people to realize that, you know, some things that happen to some people, the victims are the ones that are supposed to be sympathized with.
Yeah.
You know? They are the ones that are supposed to be sympathized with. Even child abuse, you know, when any something happens to a child, the child's mind is mad.
Yeah.
Is mad for a long time. And it will take a lot of counseling, divine intervention, prayers to get that child's mind skewed back properly, you know, and it affects people's marriages. But they don't know that that is what has affected them by virtue of the fact that probably whatever subtle abuse took place maybe when they were 10 years old, 11, you know, young age.
Yeah.
So I think that our government, we're going to continue to encourage them. They shouldn't give up. They should put, you know, all hands on deck to ensure that, you know, people turn out well. When you have someone who is very sane, person will be able to apply himself or herself to their work and will not be looking for other victims. Many people that have been victimized, if they are not straightened out, they themselves will victimize another person and it now becomes a catch-22 situation. So, you know, our psychologists, our medical people will continue to thank them for the work that they have done so far. Our government will continue to thank them for the work that they have done so far, and will also continue to encourage them, you know, that they are going in the right direction by, you know, discouraging any form of abuse.
Right. So before we let you go, so what about PILA? So for people that are listening, for female professionals in the industry who are not yet part of PILA and would want to be a part of PILA, or, you know, and maybe even people from other industries or even outside of the country who want to reach out to PILA, maybe in partnership or whatever, you know, how can they reach out to PILA? And also, you know, looking at the fact that, yes, you're working with the government, at least in Lagos State, as regards rape and other types of violence against women, you know, I mean, I don't have figures or instances of some of these things happening in the insurance industry, but maybe it's happening, and maybe some people out there, someone who is listening, might want to reach out, you know, for some support or help, you know, for PILA. So how can they reach out?
Yeah. First of all, we have our website. Secondly, we have we're like a subsidiary, so to speak, of the Chartered Insurance Institute. You can always reach out, you can always write. And even if it's in terms of confidentiality, you can always reach out to any of the officers, any of the EXCO officers. We have our website, we have, you know, our email addresses, which you can Google us and you can reach out to us very, very easily.
All right. Great. So thank you very much, Ma.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to the news updates on this episode of InsurTech Business Series. My name is Opeolua. Reps begin probe of alleged 180.9 million naira insurance breach. The House of Representatives Committee on Insurance and Actuarial on Tuesday commenced an investigation into the 180.9 million naira insurance premium allegedly paid for the failed Satellite 1 project, which was launched in 2011, as well as Satellite 1R, for which Nigeria obtained $500 million Chinese loans. The committee at the hearing, presided by the chairman, Darlington Uwokocha, ruled the managing directors of FASA, HAL Insurance and ANG engaged by the management of NIG Comsat over alleged irregularities surrounding the unilateral appointment of the insurance brokers without due process. AXA Mansard holds their annual general meeting, virtually meeting capital requirements from NIACOM 1 year in advance. AXA Mansard Insurance PLC held their annual general meeting by proxy on Wednesday, July 29, 2020 at Lagos Oriental Hotel, Victoria Islands, Lagos, and had only 20 people physically present in accordance with the COVID-19 guidelines and was live-streamed to other shareholders, regulators, and stakeholders. The insurer in the financial year ended 31st of December 2019 and recorded a profit after tax growth of 17%, while the shareholders' fund for the group grew by 21%. WAPIC Insurance changes name to Coronation Insurance PLC and plans to be one of the top three insurers by 2023. The shareholders of WAPIC Insurance PLC have given the board of the insurer a go-ahead to change the company's name to Coronation Insurance PLC during its annual general meeting. The change, according to the company's chairman Mutiu Sumonu, is to enable the firm achieve set goals. Speaking of the company's 2019 performance, the MD/CEO Adeyinka Adekoya mentioned that even though they were only able to make marginal growth in gross written premium, the gains of the necessary expenses made will be seen, as the strategic goal of the company is to be one of the top three life and non-life insurers in Nigeria by 2023. And that will be all for today's episode of the news segment. I remain Opeolua. Please do stay tuned. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back. I'm sure that you enjoyed that conversation with Abimbola Onokumaya. It was quite interesting for me because she spoke a bit about how she had to transform her engagement with her customers, you know, digitally, especially when the pandemic just started and the lockdown situation. And being that she was able to make those transformations, she was, yes, it brought about some demands for them in terms of their working hours and, you know, money they spend on data. But at the end of the day, according to her, it kept premiums, you know, coming in. So, and they even made new businesses. So it's quite interesting how profitable engaging technology can be. And I mean, it's obvious, it's something that we have been having conversations around, you know, before now. And this just tells you that if the fact that you are engaging technology, substituting what you are doing before with technology doesn't mean that there'll be a reduction in performance or production. So it's just all about us embracing, you know, that change and using it very well. So yeah, what do you think?
Well, for me, what stood out was our discussions about Pillar and also their current project on rape. So I know that rape has been like a major concern in our country. We've been having a lot of series of events, a lot of cry on social media about no to rape. At some point, there was a social media campaign on rape. So I like the fact that they moved out of their comfort zone, away from, you know, industry activities, and they're taking it out now, partnering with the Minister of Women Affairs. So it's actually one thing that stood out for me. Also, the other one about Pillar, I like the fact that she spoke about Pillar bringing up, you know, forthright women. So you're just not a professional in the industry. You are one with integrity. You are a forthright person. I like that they are able to create that ambience, that atmosphere for professional women to come together and share ideas, have conversations around, you know, their jobs, have conversation about their career paths, which is good, because now we are having women in the industry that are in leadership position. So I think it's a good drive. I've always, you know, pondered on what the entire association was all about, but I like the fact that she was able to shed more light on that bit. Then also the fact that she also spoke about digitization, which, like you rightly mentioned, as in we cannot have too much of a digitized process. We need to find ways to continue to reach out to our customers regardless. Now, we're saying that they uplifted the ban, but imagine if businesses were on hold for those 6 months, or should I say for a period of 4 to 5 months. Imagine how much income you would have, you know, lost to the pandemic. No income generation, because you don't have all of that. So it's really important that you know, they were able to digitize some of their processes. So I like all of those things that you mentioned. It means that we are getting to a point where our insurance brokers are also moving forward with the time. So they are not just sitting back, and they are, you know, left behind. It's a good thing to know.
So that's very great. And so we also want to mention that, I mean, you mentioned about their works with the Ministry of Women Affairs in Lagos. And their work against rape. So we are willing and very much in support of that, and in support of that campaign against rape, and even, I mean, abuse against women generally and children. Women need to be respected a lot more, and rape is a no-no. So kudos to Pila on that one. Okay, so on that note, I want to say thank you to Abimbola Onokomaya for coming on the program. It was an exciting one, and thank you for gracing our 10th episode. It's quite interesting, and like you said, we'll definitely be engaging a lot more women from this episode on, and you don't want to miss the amazing women that we'll be bringing in. We have someone from Kenya who is coming on the program soon, and I'm sure that will be an interesting conversation as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for paying attention. And on this note,
bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Yeah.